All right, another part one episode of a multi-parter, right?
No.
No?
I don't know. Probably not, but
probably
we'll see.
Not.
Yeah, this episode will be the one we get, you know, 67 comments on, right?
Mm-hmm.
I doubt it.
I
doubt it.
Yeah, yeah, probably not. This is a yelling title, as I mentioned earlier. Crown rot.
I bet you just clipped the hell out of that, didn't you?
I probably did. Crown rot.
Crown rot. Just doesn't serve the same.
That sounded like a Pixar character saying, you know, the way you just did that.
Crown rot.
Yeah, I see some little like gnome type creature running around in the field.
No, that was the voice of the oospore that's causing your black root rot.
Ooh. Yeah. Won't that be something when Pixar finally runs out of ideas and they make a film about hop production?
Then you know they're done. That's mm-hmm. just where they could just go on film or on camera and just say, I got nothing. I got nothing.
Imagine what the associated ride will be.
Oh. Are you going to be a hop plant getting drugged through a wolf harvester?
Oh, that's perfect. That is perfect.
Nice.
I love it. They need a new high adventure ride, you know.
Okay, I'm in now. I'm all in now. I'm all about it.
Harvester. I love mm-hmm. it. Oh, and imagine what kind of Disney princess you need for that kind of movie.
Right.
Ooh. Wow, Ooh. Possibilities are endless.
Yep.
All right. So crown rots.
Crown rot. Yeah, we're going to talk about crown rot today.
We haven't been in the dirt for a while.
We have not. No, we've been talking about all these other esoteric things.
Yes.
Freaking customer service. Who needs customer service? Mm-hmm. Especially when you don't have any sales.
Oops.
Oops.
Well, maybe. Well, and you know, one begat the other.
Yeah, right.
No. You can have some sales. You can destroy it without customer service. But that's customer service part two. We'll get to that another day.
Right. We will.
Part two.
Yep. We're going to talk about crown rot. And again, because of the Discord and the chats that were going on there, I thought, well, let's just talk about this because we have not talked about crown rot specifically and what that looks like in the field, what it means, and what it means for you.
Mm-hmm.
Control and what can I do about it? What's going to happen? Am I over? Do I just need to sell everything? Close up shop? So, yeah, we're going to talk. This isn't sciencey science. This is just one science today, I think.
Just one science. I didn't realize there was a number of sciences threshold for the sciencey science category.
Yeah, sciencey science. And then you've got exponents. So, I mean, yeah, scientific notation.
Yeah, this is an in the field episode. So
this is one times, this is, you know, let's say 1 × 10^2 sciences.
One time. Okay, that just made it sciencey science by describing it that way, I think. I'm still back on maybe naming this little gnome character in the Pixar movie Crown Rot. I think that should be the name of the character.
Yeah, okay. Well, I have you play with your doodles, and I'll entertain our listeners.
Okay, yes. Why don't we explain what crown rot is?
So I see this. Certainly saw quite a bit in our fields because of the soil type and the fact that it would be. Well, we had in Wisconsin. We typically, well, back in the day, had more than ample amounts of precipitation and wet fields, and certainly after the winter thaw. Boy, can I do any more weird James T. Kirk pauses there? Particularly after the winter thaw and water starts to run off, but yet the soil's not completely thawed all the way down to, you know, the water table so it can drain. So you'd get these, what we call frost-perched water tables. And so you get the top foot and a half or 2 feet of soil just saturated. And it was just warm enough, though, to allow these fungal microorganisms to do their thing. People that are in heavy sand wouldn't necessarily experience that quite so much. But this idea of, you know, I'm going down my my rose, and I would see this in our Chinook / Skyrocket is where it started first, because it was also the heaviest soil. We had like 4 or 5 different soil types on our farm. But there was one section where the Chinook were planted that was downhill. It was 4 feet of topsoil, just heavy, dark black loamy topsoil, really good looking stuff. It was super deep, but you know, you go over to the next 20 acre block and it would be like gravel. So like, can you spread this around a little bit? So that corner, when it got wet, it would get wet and it would hold that water. And it was also the low corner. And
oh, it all ran there. Yep.
It all ran there. And then lo and behold, after about 5 or 6 years in that block, I started seeing, you know, the crowns from the previous year. Every year the shoots seem to creep out a little further from the crown. And that's going to happen just over time, as that woody crown, as we've talked way back in our roots episode, that was sciencey science. But the crown itself, there'll be some buds that form on the woody portion of the crown. And those aren't necessarily great buds to use. They're usually aerial, you know, above soil surface. If they make it through the winter, they're not too vigorous. But the shoots that are coming up from the rhizomes usually happen not too far away from the crown, right? Of, say, 5 or 6 inches. But I was starting to see, like, shoots coming up, like, 1.5 feet away. Like, yeah, we didn't put a hop plant there. What's going on? And, you know, after 2 or 3 years of observing that, I'm like, what? Now I've got, like, a hedgerow. Because the crowns have all moved around. Why? What the hell is going on? Mm-hmm. So as we are digging through these things, literally digging them up and looking at them, saying, what's happening here? And the crown had died. It's just gone. But as you're digging down and getting underneath the crown, you're finding this very sharp delineation between this kind of gray, mushy, dead tissue. It's clearly dead and water soaked and very healthy tissue. It's not like this sort of like gradual gradation of, you know, rot to life. It's just like somebody drew a line.
It's almost like you can scrape off the bad and keep going with the good.
Well, yeah. So if I wanted to, literally what the plant did is the plant said, I'm going to take these underground runners that we've got and form new crowns because this old crown is done. It's done. For whatever reason. And so then wherever that rhizome had buds, because those buds can form into shoots or roots, it said, I'm going to establish a new crown here. And I'm going to establish a new crown over here. And another one over here. Because the sort of like the control center crown died. Rotted out. And so you get what we call crown creep. Now you get crowns, you know, in smaller individual crowns popping up all over the place. And they could be on the side of the hill. They could be, you know, right next to your other plant, and it destroys your plant spacing. So I was like, what in the hell is going on? And then it would progress to the point where even those, what I call them daughter crowns, would not be viable. They'd last for a season or two. And then you just got these big sections that don't have any hops in them anymore. Ugh. You're like, I don't. But I saw really no symptoms, just all of a sudden, it's just my crowns are not performing anymore. So what's going on there? That, my friends, is black root rot, or crown rot. And it's caused by a disease, in, you know, fungal disease, Phytophthora citricola is the name of it. And this disease, it's fungal like. It falls kind of in the same family of hop diseases as like downy mildew does. Don't freak out. I said the DM word. Don't freak yep. out.
That's when people throw their hands up in the air.
I know, right? It has the same reproductive structure. So the oospore, like downy does. So it requires, it's like water mold. It requires free flowing water in order to
propagate itself and move around. Thus, if you have heavy water-soaked soils, your likelihood of having this Phytophthora disease is pretty high. Heavy soils don't help either. Even if they're not waterlogged or water-soaked, if they get like heavy clay soils, if they get water-soaked, they take a long time to dry out. Mm-hmm. Well, the longer that water's around, the likelihood of having this disease show up is increased.
Just dense and moist.
Dense and moist, yep. Just like my brain. So, not a good thing. So, what's happening here is you've got these, well, this disease, first and foremost, doesn't only occur in hops. I mean, it occurs in fruit trees, in grapes, in raspberries, and in pretty much most of our high-value horticultural crops. But it also will infect all sorts of landscape plants, too. It's all over the place. It's not like, oh my God, I brought this in on bad rhizomes like downy mildew. No, this stuff's everywhere. And it's just looking for the right conditions to get a hold. And so let's take a few steps back. When I said, hey, nothing seemed to be going wrong, and all of a sudden I don't have any crowns. Well, when one goes back and reviews the data that one recorded in their waterproof yellow notebook for seasons upon end, I did notice that there were some changes in those plants over time. And primarily it was vigor. As one might expect, as your roots are rotting, your plant vigor is also going to decline.
You would think.
you would think, right? And certainly we know that the crown is a fairly complicated physiological structure, and it drives a lot of the plant growth regulator production in the plant. So when you start monkeying and tinkering around with that, it screws up your vigor. At the same time, you've got these other daughter crowns forming that are fighting for dominance. And these plants are all still connected by their underground roots. Sure. So it's not just one crown. Now you've got like two or three kind of brains trying to form all at the same time, and who's going to win? So overall vigor seems to drop. And also the plant itself just becomes a little bit more chlorotic, a little bit more yellow. And you will see more sparsely, the leaves will be more sparse. The sidearms will be kind of thin and more sparse, and maybe the plant doesn't top out. And that happens, and when you get to that point, the crown is probably just about ready to give up the ghost.
And I was just going to ask that question, are these leading indicators or trailing indicators? And it sounds like they're all trailing.
They're all trailing. You won't necessarily know that you've got that issue until suddenly you see that problem, right? And then you're like, oh, what's going on here? And you're going to be scratching your head. You're like, oh, my fertilizer over here is no good. I've got they're not getting enough water. No, for the love of God, don't put any more water on them. So I know some of our friends, like in Australia, are like, man, to have crown rot problems, I don't have enough water to even water my family, let alone my hops. Right. So those of us in drought conditions are like, why is this a problem? But those of us in very wet conditions, this is an all too common occurrence. But let's see here. What else I want to say? How do you diagnose it? Ultimately, you dig up that crown and take a look at it. And it's likely going to be gray to black and probably squishy or water soaked. It's not going to be like a firm, hardened, rotten section. It's going to be squishy, like you would expect something rotten to be, right? Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Ugh. Yeah. And it might actually stink a little bit, but that's all from that Phytophthora fungus. What do you do about it?
Sounds like you take it out and put a new one in.
You'd certainly take it out, but you do not put anything else there because you have a Phytophthora infection.
Ah.
And it's going to continue to infect whatever it is that you put there until you take away the conditions that allow it to thrive.
And I think you mentioned before. Well, I know you mentioned before because I was listening.
You were.
That is
oh,
that
come
there is
on.
A,
that's what's the
there
bullshit.
Is a connected network. Well, there is a connected network going on. I'm going to prove it to you. There's a connected network going on down there. So if you find it in one place, you've got to figure out where kind of what the radius of damage is as well.
And you will see it. On large farms, you can take aerial photos and you can see entire sections, you know, these sort of amorphous patches of hops that are affected by a Phytophthora infection. And it's localized. It's not like, well, if you have an acre, yeah, you could have Phytophthora over your whole acre. But if you've got a large planting, it's usually localized to one section, and that section is usually associated with either over irrigation. It all comes down to water. Over irrigation, heavy soils, it's a low spot. All these things combine to create overly saturated soil conditions. Even though, let's say, the rest of your field may be okay, but this one low spot, or for whatever reason, the soil's denser there, is going to hold on to water longer. You're creating conditions that are ripe for this Phytophthora citricola infection to occur. That's it.
So I don't want to ruin your flow with water joke, but at some point, probably later when we get through, you know, what you do here to fix, I want to talk about how you proactively plan, because, you know, a low spot is a physical nature of your yard, and how do you proactively prevent that from being an issue? Over irrigation, you can fix.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. That's a good point. Let's bring that up later. So what's happening here? Well, when you've got this free flowing or high levels of water in your soil column, in the top, let's say, foot, you've got these oospores that are, you know, swimming around, floating around in the water, and they are attracted to, they can actually find, they're attracted to the sugars and amino acids and everything that healthy roots exude. Back in the roots episode, we talked about how these growing roots have these root caps, and they have this goo on them. We call it root mucilage, and that's amino acids, proteinaceous substances, sugars, and things like that. And that's what those oospores are attracted to. So they will seek out root tip that are growing that have relatively thin epidermis, like bark, on them, so that they can very easily sort of clamp onto them and send their mycelia into the cells and penetrate and start the rotting process, mm-hmm. feeding off of those healthy roots. Oh, bastards. So that's what's happening. And
if only words were enough to make them put their tail between their legs and run away.
If only, yeah. Hey, if bad language was some sort of pesticide, fungicide alternative, my farm would have been pristine.
you would have half the country as your farm if that would actually work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's what's happening. What do you do to stop it? Well, like we talked about, we can address the physical cause of that. But in some cases, that's where your hops are, and you can't like recontour your whole place. So what are you going to do about it? Well, James, what can I spray? All right, gang, let's slow our roll with spray and pray. We got to stop that mentality, okay?
Apparently just spraying profanity everywhere is all you need to do.
Spraying, spewing.
Spewing, yes.
Vomitous profanity. That's
the answer.
That's the answer.
Finally, the answer.
Finally, we finally get to it. But fungicide-wise, there really hasn't been a lot of efficacy from our standard conventional fungicides for knocking down this Phytophthora infection. If we look at large-scale commercial production of other high-value crops, higher-value crops than hops, like strawberries and things like that, back in the day, way back in the day, we used to do something called soil fumigation, where you would, the grower would install plastic over the soil, like plastic sheeting, and pump methyl bromide gas into the soil to basically kill everything. Yeah, that's smart, right? But that's how you got rid of these pathogens of these high-value crops. We do not fumigate soils anymore as a standard practice, although some people still do. I am not a proponent of that. But that would certainly take care of it. But most of our growers aren't going to be able to do that. So what else? What are you treating the whole soil? Are you just treating the crown? How are we addressing this? Soil fumigation is going after the organism everywhere to make to wipe it out and make sure it doesn't exist. Our ability to control Phytophthora citricola is all about, first and foremost, fixing the issue that causes the fixing the site conditions and production conditions. But chemically, there's little in the way of, I shouldn't say research, because it has been researched fairly heavily. So there's evidence that crown drenches in the spring with mefenoxam, like ritamil, has some efficacy against this root rot, black root rot. There's also some efficacy from what we call phosphorus acid fungicides, that we use for downy mildew and things like that. Again, this is oospores are what we're after, and those are very much downy mildew family type compounds.
And just to be clear, what you're talking about here, these are preventatives. There is nothing you can do to reverse the problem once it's started.
Oh yeah, no, no.
Okay, just want to be clear about that. This is all preventative measure.
Right, and many of you who have downy mildew and you're doing crown drenches in the spring, you may also be inadvertently helping to control this Phytophthora infection. But for those of you who don't have downy mildew, but do have, let's say, heavy, flooded soils or, high moisture conditions in the early spring, but then maybe they disappear such that you don't have a lot of downy problems, then this may be something you might consider trying if you're seeing these large patches die out in your yard. But the efficacy is spotty. It's sort of like it won't hurt, and this kind of works against downy, and this is sort of in the same family, so give it a shot. But there's really no recommendations on the labels for crown drenches and things like that in order to control black crown rot or black root rot. Mm-hmm. For backyard growers and home growers, your best bet is to dig it up. Dig it up and don't plant there, because you have a soil problem. And usually for most residential locations, that soil problem is affected. It's when they, certainly in our newer suburb developments, the quote soil, and I'm using air quotes here, isn't really soil. It's basically subsoil that they've trudged up from when they created the subdivision, and they put like an inch of topsoil over it. So it's usually very heavy. Yeah, it's garbage. It's usually very, clayey and doesn't drain well because they've compacted it so much by just grating everything, the bejesus. So, you're digging in your backyard. You're like, I wonder why this just keeps rotting out. I can't grow hops here. It's probably because your soil's way too heavy back there, and you're likely overwatering it. Mm-hmm. Stop it. I know you want to do well, but that's more is not better.
And again, people are throwing their hands in the air, which don't do that when you're driving, because so many times we say, well, it's probably, we talk all the time about the fact that you need a dedicated well, you need water, 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 you need water, your hops need water. And now we're saying, too much water.
Too much water at any given period of time. Mm-hmm. Hops use a lot of water, but they don't need a lot of water when it's springtime and they don't have any foliage up.
Yep.
They need a lot of water in July when, you've got this 20-foot tall column of foliage that grew in 6 weeks, but not in the early parts of the season. So that's really what I'm talking about, is in the fall, winter, and spring, before your plants are really the biomass isn't there to use that water. If it's just sitting there in locations that have wet winters that are not frozen tundras like I get, that water just sits there all winter long. And if it's not frozen, if it's warm enough to rain basically all winter, then it's warm enough for that Phytophthora to be active all winter and just waiting and infecting your hop roots as they're in quasi dormancy. So let's make that distinction. But for your backyard growers, it's dig it up, get rid of it. There's not a lot you can do other than maybe looking at some varieties that seem to be more resistant to black root rot than others. And there are, my faves, Brewer's Gold, anything from that lineage tends to show fairly good resistance to root rot. I think Chinook being the outlier there. I know that cluster and some of the English types are fairly susceptible to it, so you might see that being a problem. The Hollitower family seems to be more resistant to it. Maybe resistance is not the right, maybe tolerant is the right way to describe that. But so there is some varietal impacts there. So, you know, some are more resistant than others, just like with Downy, right? Some are more resistant than others.
Does it parallel the ones that are Downy resistant necessarily?
That's a good question. I don't know. I haven't looked at that. I would think there's probably some logic to that, just given the how the plant is infected. But I would also guess that it has a lot to do with the root or anatomy, like, you know, how thick is the root cuticle and how easy can, you know, some roots may have thinner cuticle and epidermis that makes it easier for that oospore to infect than sure. others.
That makes a lot of sense. Whereas Downy is much more a leaf thing.
Yep.
Yep.
So I'm thinking that's probably what we're looking at there. But we know it's fairly prevalent in other parts of the world in hop production as well. I mean, England and Czech Republic and you name it, Bavaria. So it's a thing, but that may be what's causing your issues when you're like, hey, I don't understand. Why am I getting this real spotty crown issues here?
Is it, and I'm just having ideas here, could it be an age thing as well? I mean, would older, more mature crowns be more susceptible, would you think, whereas younger ones may be a little more resistant?
Not necessarily.
No.
Nope.
It's more conditions.
It's conditions. If you have an old crown in, you know, well drained, properly irrigated soils, it can last for decades. And it wouldn't necessarily be any more susceptible than a brand new young crown, I would think.
We haven't talked about our aching backs and our medications yet today. I'm just thinking, you know, old things are more susceptible to stuff. So
speaking of aching backs, oh my God, my back is killing me. So that's black crown rot, the root rot. Not to be confused with red crown rot, which is totally different. Thank you very much, Australia. You guys keep talking about, well, we don't have Downy over here. Yeah, but you got red crown rot, bastards. And now we have it. Thank you very much.
Is that what you use to make like Achillean's? Is that?
It could be.
Okay.
It probably tastes like it. but
wow. Okay.
Anything else we want to cover about black root rot before we get into the red variety?
Just the point I mentioned earlier about, you know, proactively fixing a low spot, but I think that probably is applicable for both.
Well, they're two different critters, red crown rot and black root rot. So they're totally different monsters. So for the black root rot, it's avoid pooling water. You don't want to see water pooling in your field. If you do, you have a drainage issue there, and you may be, it may be being caused from irrigation or from Mother Nature, but regardless, you are creating conditions ripe for infection there. And don't be surprised if you're like, well, yeah, the water pools, but then it's gone in a day or so. That's plenty of time for that to happen. You don't want to see any pooling water.
And given the issue here, just because the pooling water is gone doesn't mean your density of moisture down there underneath where the root is isn't very bad for quite a period of time past the visual pooling you're seeing.
Yeah, correct. And that's, you know, they're, these oospores are swimming through the soil water. They're not floating through the air. So having that even a high water table subsurface can be a problem. And I mean, we saw this. We had a grower in Michigan that had this issue perennially and just couldn't figure out. It didn't matter how tall he made his mounds. It's like, well, your mounds are made of mostly clay. So we have to change the soil structure to allow for better drainage. But really, ultimately, for that kind of heavy clay soil, you're only going to be able to amend the soil, what, 18 inches maybe? Tops. So then everything that's below that is still going to be clayey type soil that's going to compact and hold water. So now you're going to end up with what we call a perched water table, where, yeah, you've got great drainage down through the first foot and a half or 2 feet of your soil, and it hits this clay and stops.
Oh.
So now you turn that great drainable soil into a sponge, and it just sits there.
And that combined with a high water table, I mean, that's oof.
Yeah. It's like turn it into a rice paddy. do something else. Hops are not the thing for that location, nor really would it be anything, just because anything you put in there is going to end up getting that Phytophthora infection and just not lasting.
Wow.
Annual crops, that's your best bet. Annual crops.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, so controlling your irrigation as well, making sure that you know how much water you need to put on, when you need to put it on, and just not irrigate because you think you need it. You got to do the math. Because even if you're not, to your point, Greg, you're not seeing that pooling on the surface, doesn't mean that you're not holding your soil at or above field capacity. It's holding capacity for the soil type that you've got. If you've got lots and lots of water in your soil and you're not allowing it to drain away over time and then fill it back up and drain away, it's what we call field capacity. If you're getting into that more saturated conditions, your likelihood of having this kind of black crown rot, I'm sorry, black root rot is increased.
Sure. So yeah, it's low spots are bad. Of course, you've got, you know, it'd be ideal if your field was completely level. That's not reality. But
slightly sloped downhill would be great in order to provide just drainage off your field. But
maybe into the neighbor's field.
Shh. Oh, shh. Right.
I didn't say that.
Yeah. But red crown rot is something totally different. Red crown rot is a totally different, it's a true fungus. Fastidiopycnus is the name of it, right?
That's a I'm pretty sure that's a Hunger Games character, but go on.
It probably is. I like that. And this stuff survives in plant debris, on hot plants itself, right? And in the soil as a sort of a over, we call it an overwintering body, but a little nodule that can go on to infect things. But the most likely cause of infection of this disease is through injured roots. Whereas the black root rot is an oospore that's going to sort of latch onto the root and burrow into it, regardless of whether it's healthy or not. This red crown rot is really looking for some sort of wound to get into.
Ooh.
Now, this is going to be very important here in a minute when we talk about cultural practices. This was first reported in hops in 81 in Australia, but it has been confirmed in the Pacific Northwest of the U.S. In more than a few locations. So this one's going to affect our Aussie friends more than it's affecting the North Americans and probably the South, Central and South Americans. But it's also been recorded in Western Europe. But this is not something that's going to be like a powdery mildew where you're going to see it on your leaves. You're like, oh, I got powdery. This takes a few seasons to establish itself. And even before you know it's a problem. But you're going to notice probably first off that the cone yield is down and your alpha acids are low, lower than they should be. But what does this look like? So unlike the black root rot where you get these squishy, mushy, water-soaked kind of roots, this red crown rot creates like this thickened, stringy outer bark on the roots. So you'll see the thickening of the epidermis of the roots. And the core, what we call the cortex of the root, the very center, will be reddish-brown and kind of pithy and dried out. So it's not like water soaked. It's actually like dry rot.
Huh.
Totally different thing. The plant itself will be kind of yellow and spindly once it's obviously gotten a hold of it. And the roots themselves, when you dig them up and look at them, they're kind of twisted. It looks like somebody took a healthy rhizome, a healthy root, and just sort of gave it a twist. It's kind of like a Twizzlers, right? Hmm. And so they'll be twisted and gnarled that way. The bark, like I said, gets really thick and will turn kind of fibrous and become loose on the outside of the root and up onto the crown. Yeah. Nasty stuff.
Yeah, that sounds, and once again, it sounds like something where once you've got it, there's no going back on this. There's prevention,
no.
And then there's pull out and replace.
Right. And even again, it's pull out and now what do I do? Because I've got this in the soil here. As long as the plant's healthy, like you haven't, this particular infection requires open wounds. So ideally what you would do to start off with clean plants that are free from this fungus, that would be good. Or cuttings, specifically cuttings. Like if you're cutting out of a rhizome out of another field. That's when we talk about cuttings as opposed to like plant cuttings. Avoid mechanical pruning. That's, you know, we talk about, people talk about, well, how should I, you know, should I carp, you know, cut the top of my crowns and then recut the mound. So if you've seen that happen, you know, you got this big gigantic circular saw blade turned on its side going down the hill, cutting 3 inches off of your crown, you got these big giant gaping crown wounds that then you're piling soil back up over. Is that smart? Which is, I think, why we see this be so devastating in these areas that use that sort of old world European crown pruning technique, as they're making these giant gashes. They're literally cutting into the brainstem of the plant every spring and then piling up soil around it that have these spores in it.
Wow.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Not good. So if you're in an area that has this disease, you've got to know that it's an issue and that it can happen to you. You know, the actual, I think it was called Phimosis tuberivora is the actual species and genus and species of this.
Yeah, it's not a Harry Potter spell, sure.
It's not a Harry Potter spell. Nope. Yeah, I'm just looking here at one of Dave Gent's papers. As recently as 2007, it was noticed to be a problem in Oregon on fungal. But the grower noted that symptoms appeared several years prior and have become increasingly severe.
Which is exactly what you said. Yeah, that it takes several years to become a real problem.
Uneven weak vines, chlorotic leaves.
All things
underdeveloped lateral sidearms.
Well, and those are all things that could be mistaken for a variety of nutrient deficiencies.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The disease symptoms were suggested of red crown rot. The disease described on hop in Australia is attributed to the one I talked about earlier, Pisidiopycnus.
And this is what always cracks me up when you see posts on Facebook that say, what's wrong with my hops? And is a picture of a leaf.
Right.
Where do we start asking questions?
Well, and when I am feeling particularly cheeky and combative.
Which is when you're awake, basically.
But pretty much, yeah. And I engage with those people on social media and I start asking these questions. Very rarely do I get a response because the questions I'm asking are exactly like, what is this? What is this? What is this? Did you do this? Did you check this? And they're not looking for that. They're looking for easy answers. And you get some other folks on those forums that chime in and give you know, one answer. They're like, oh, it's this.
Yeah. Well, they want to know what aisle in Menards to go to buy the jug to pour on it to fix it.
Pretty much. Yes. Exactly. And that's not the way it works. Sorry, folks. So, yeah, I just thought we'd talk about crown rot. Yeah. And we talked about crown rot. And there's no need to have crown rot part two.
There's no need. That was our gag. Before we got on the air, I said, you just wait. This is going to be bigger than you think. You did say earlier you were going to mention something about cultural practices with the red crown rot.
Well, I was talking about the crown pruning. You need, if you're in an area that has that, you got to stop root pruning. At least long enough to allow that disease to not have a host in order to infect. Mm-hmm. Mostly it's going to be, and you're going to cause this infection event by crown pruning or rhizome digging or things of that nature. If it's a large enough block for you pro growers out there, you may want to consider getting rid of them and allowing that patch to lie fallow for a year or two. And then, you know, go in with healthy new plants. Because again, as long as the plant and the root system is healthy, your likelihood of infection is pretty low. But then that necessitates a change in your cultural practice. And can your system, your overall production system, tolerate that change? Because you may be set up to do hilling and cut down and carping in the spring. And now suddenly you can't do that. But now what are you going to do? You know, you have to completely change your cultural practices to make sure you don't have that problem.
And even just you saying, you know, if you can let it lie fallow for a year, depending on the size of your farm, can you afford to let that land lie for a year?
Well, and ultimately, you know, you look at larger farms, and if you're growing an acre, 2 acres of hops, this is not your primary source of income.
True.
Right. Even I would argue if you're growing 20 acres of hops, it's not your primary source of income. So you and your whole 20 acres is not likely, or even single acre is not likely to be infected if you're paying attention and catch it soon enough. So we're talking about maybe it's a row, maybe it's 3 rows. You know, if you're on 20 acres, maybe it is 5 acres. Is it going to suck? Yeah. Or you could continue with what you're doing, plant into an infected spot, never have the yield you want, and just spend good money over bad and be in the hole regardless. If you would have just allowed it to lie fallow and burn itself out and then go back in, you would ultimately save yourself a lot of time and money.
What's wrong with my hops?